Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Jaguars This Week. Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman. And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, here we go. Time for Jaguars This Week, Wednesday evening, the 16th of May. Brian Sexton and Jeff Lagerman with you. Osher's in the building somewhere. He'll mosey on in whenever he...
He's on Osher time.
Exactly. Whenever he remembers that the show is on.
Got to pull him out of the ozone.
It's all. That's a good line. Did that just come right off the top of your head?
It did.
There you go.
Every now and again, I'll pull one out.
We don't need him anyway. If your brain is working like that tonight, we are just fine. Joe's here, and Joe's always willing to turn the microphone on and say hello.
OTAs, baby. How about that?
Yeah.
You know, I got to be honest with you. I came back down today. I was in the area.
And you got a little wet.
Got a little wet. You may see everything. You may see a lot. I don't. I mean, I've been around this a long time. I can see a guy who looks good. Cameron Bradfield stood out to me today.
He's been looking good.
Looks good, right? I noticed LaRon Robinson today, you know, catching wet passes. The fine little details are what I miss out there, and I'm wondering if your filter catches all of them or if it's just this is just that time of year where you can't get very specific.
You catch some of them, and I say some of them because the OTA schedule for us, media, is a little different now than it has been over the last couple of years. Now that they've gone to the OTAs with the entire squad, they have allowed the practice to be watched by us and other members of the media for the first 50 minutes, and then after that it's closed up. And I understand why. I mean, you got a new coaching staff, and you want to install your offense, and so you don't want to even risk having anything get out. So I get that part of it.
Right.
So what you analyze really is a minimal amount, a lot of individual period. You don't get to see any kind of team structure stuff, but you can watch how people look. And the best news from this week's OTAs was Justin Blackmon was at practice yesterday and today, and he was full go and running very well. Which was, you know, obviously last week was the topic of conversation after the rookie minicamp. Sure. And then, obviously, John, by the way, nice to have you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Good to be here.
Rolls off his tongue.
We were going to start
the show.
Well, we were just saying you were somewhere in the ozone.
I was in the ozone.
Exactly.
I was in the...
But you wrote something, Jaguars.com, that talked about Justin's improperly fitted cleats that he had worn for the rookie minicamp, or somebody wrote it.
That's what he said in the press conference. I mean, he said it wasn't a big deal. He said his foot was sore because he'd had a cleat misfitted. And I mean, as it turned out, sometimes what people say is true. And what Mike Mularkey said on the Sunday of minicamp was true, was that it was a minor thing. And a week later, it's not an issue.
So, yeah, I don't want us to give people the impression that all of a sudden, you know, we're treating him as if he's going to be the savior of the passing game. But, I mean,
it's a big story, though.
But it's a big story because he's the first-round pick, and obviously one that certainly everybody's gotten very excited about because he's going to be a great football player.
Another guy today that I noticed, again, in the limited passing, because a lot of the time that they were working quarterbacks, they were working with the receivers, or not the receivers, the running backs. So I did notice Cecil Shorts a bit today for the first time in a couple of...
Yeah, all reports are that... You know, Jerry Sullivan likes Cecil a lot, which is a good indication that he has the potential. And all reports are, you know, that he's doing well. All reports early in camp last year were that he was doing well. So you would hope that this will be a case where a second-year guy, you know, can figure out what's going on and have the stamina to make it, you know, go through the season playing well. And you just won't know until that happens.
And you got to temper a lot of the, you know, excitement for a guy, you know, because here we are in May.
Sure.
You know, and there's a long way to go until you get to Sunday. You know, so, you know, because, I mean, a lot of people, I think, sometimes maybe overreact to what we say on the show.
Sure.
And that if we say, hey, Cameron Bradfield looks really good, or John Estes looks really good, all of a sudden in the conversation amongst fans, all of a sudden, Cameron Bradfield's going to compete for a starting job, and John Estes is probably going to push out Brad Meester.
Right.
Right.
No,
I don't want people to get – we get excited about guys – but it's in this setting.
You know, I love hearing, hey, you know, on May 16th, I love getting an email, how'd they look? Well, they look like football players running around in shorts on May 16th.
Well, and Cameron Bradford.
That's really what it is.
When I say he looked good, I mean physically.
Well, you know what, Brian? The day he came in here, and what school did he come from?
He was a Central Valley.
I got to look.
Grand Valley State.
Yeah, Grand Valley State.
Right.
And you don't expect a guy to walk in the door on day one. Now, I'm talking about last year. To walk in on day one like he did last year.
From a school with three names.
Exactly. You know, Grand Valley State, Saginaw Valley, like a Paul Spicer. I mean, those type of schools, you don't expect them to walk in the door and you go, oh, my, what has this guy been lifting while he's been at Grand Valley State? I mean, when he came in the door, he looked the part. I mean, physically, a very impressive, imposing man. And last year, when he did get a chance to play, he did outstanding.
Steelers game.
I mean, against the Pittsburgh Steelers, to get told, you know, minutes prior to kickoff, hey, you're starting for – you know, Evan Britton at, you know, right tackle.
I
think he's one reason. I got a lot of questions after the draft. Why didn't they draft depth? Why didn't they go for depth on the offensive line? Well, if you look at it, they sort of have depth on the offensive line.
I don't think sort of. I think they
do. Yeah, I mean, and so you can, if you're thinking, okay, we're going to draft a starter, to just say, boy, they're in trouble if X or Y goes down, I'm not sure that's the case on the offensive line. As much as people want to criticize that unit, I don't think he likes depth.
No. I mean, who won the Super Bowl?
Yeah, the Giants.
How's their offensive line?
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
They got one All-Pro in Chris Knee and a bunch of guys around him who play very well. You know, I had a guy tell me today that he said, you know, there's more talent on that offensive line than people know. And as an example, they used the undrafted kid out of Texas State and said, DJ Hall is a guy that you should watch. He's got the body style to be
doesn't
a guard.
Doesn't have a neck.
No, he does not have a neck.
We're just going to call him no neck.
Yeah. Boy, does he have a
61. Yeah, that's no neck.
He is a big guy on the lower quarters. And he looks like a guard. I mean,
he looks like a no-neck guard. Yeah. All day long. They're going to have to get him, like, custom shoulder pads so he can have head movement because he's got no neck.
But I watched him. He moves pretty well for a big guy.
Oh, he moves pretty good. And he's built, you know, real stout around the lower end.
You bet.
You know, but you know, a lot of people make comments like that, this offensive line needed depth and this offensive line needs an upgrade. Well, wait a minute. Didn't the running back lead the league in rushing last year?
You bet.
Last time I checked, they were okay. And better than okay. I thought they were pretty solid.
How much of the offensive line's trouble last year was the wide receiving problem?
Well, it was a little bit of everything. You know, you had a young quarterback under center. You had a wide receiving group that struggled. You know, I don't think the coaching was the best in the world. So, I mean, there's a lot of reasons. I say coaching. I'm talking about other areas.
Right.
You know, so –
you also had Guy Wimper playing hurt, and Will Rackley playing as a rookie. And
with dislocated fingers.
Everybody has hammered on Will Rackley, and, you know, Jeff, we've talked about it a lot. The bottom line is young players, rookies, it's rare that they don't have, you know, it's rare they don't have struggles. It's rare that they're a Pro Bowl top guy. It's really, really rare.
If he continues to ascend, to get better, William Rackley, I mean, holy cow. I mean, Uche played at a level that was almost Pro Bowl last year. I thought he was very good. I thought Brad Meester might have had his best year yet in his 12th year, last year.
This would be 13 in the fall.
You know, so, and he didn't show signs that he was ready to slow down yet. Eugene Monroe, I thought, took a step up after, you know, a preseason of a lot of questions with weight and, you know, could he handle it? But then he had a little nick there, but he fought through it. I thought he was solid. You know, getting Eben back healthy, having Guy Wimper healthy. You know, a lot of people say, well, Guy Wimper, he was a turnstile. Well, everybody that says that is looking at one game, and that's the Atlanta Falcon game in which John Abraham, you know, beat him like a drum.
Right.
But then also, if you got to take into account that John Abraham is one of the premier pass rushers in the league. And if you've got a premier pass rusher in the league, what would you like to do? Maybe double him. Maybe give your right tackle who's got some leg injury issues a little help. They didn't give him any help.
Yeah. So you were saying the coaching. All right.
No offensive line is without flaws in this league right now. And if you can sit here and honestly say what you just said, Jeff, which is that you can go down three of them and say, good, 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 and go over the other two and say, if things break right, they're pretty good, then you're in decent shape in the offseason in this league right now. You are not going to have a roster without question marks in the NFL.
So what's your sense of where Evan Britton is right now? Because, I mean, if he comes back and can play like he did as a rookie before he got hurt, boy, you feel real good about your group.
Well, let me say this about Evan Britton first and foremost. I love the guy because the guy loves the game. And he's one of those tough guys. He's going to play, and he's going to play hard, and he's got a little nasty to him, likes to finish plays. I mean, go back to his rookie year, which was really the last time that we saw him play for an extended period of time. I mean, he gave you reason to be excited. And so having him back healthy, shoulder issues gone, the back issues hopefully are behind him. I'm excited about watching where he's going to be at because he's going to be healthy, hopefully. William Rackley is going to be in year two after making the conversion from a small college school, playing left tackle to playing guard. I mean, these guys, I mean, you can tell that the arrow's pointing up, and I think they're just going to continue to get better. And if they gel with a young quarterback that will get better.
They think Britton's going to be okay. And I look at it like this. The more weeks he goes, the more practices he can string together, the better you're going to feel about it. And it's kind of self-explanatory, but they think the back's okay. There's a lot of skepticism among a lot of fans that that's true because you hear back and you go, oh, my goodness.
What's the old line? Durability supersedes ability.
But or availability like supersedes okay, ability. And if it is, he's in good shape.
All right, folks, this portion of Jaguars This Week has been brought to you by our friends at Football Fanatics. Time out and more with John, Jeff, and you. 355-NFL 1-800-355-6351. You're listening to Jaguars Radio. Well, Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out today at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. John Osher, Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato, Brian Sexton with you here. And tomorrow night, you can join Jeff Loggeman live in Nassau County. Bocelli is still lounging on the beach in California. And so you're stepping up to the plate to be Team Teal Commissioner for a night.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's a rally. It's going to be up there in Fernandina Beach. I'll get the exact location in just a minute. But it's going to be from 6 to 8 p.m., and I'm looking forward to it because it's going to be myself, Bill Prescott.
That'd be fun.
Senior VP, CFO for the Jaguars is going to be there, as well as Mel Tucker, the Jaguars defensive coordinator. And he's bringing along the defensive line coach, Joe Cullen.
That'd be a lot of fun.
And then we got
Joe
a couple.
Joe say anything he wants?
Well, be
more fun if
hopefully
could.
Not like practice field.
You should have heard him today.
And then two players, Paul Posluszny and Russell Allen. So it's going to
be good.
Good event.
Yeah.
You know, a chance for the fans to come out, you know, shake hands, listen to the players, listen to the coaches. And
Joe's a pleasure to hear speak, as everybody knows, and so is Mel. But, boy, is Posluszny an impressive guy. If you talk to him, listen to him. He's really kind of turned into the defensive, one of the defensive spokesmen.
Go-to guy.
And, just never fails to sort of impress you with his intelligence. And that's true of a lot of guys on this team. And, sort of on that note, I thought Terrence Knighton the other day, when he was discussing his incident with the media, sort of his first time really discussing that incident, I thought he handled that about as well as it could be handled. And, I don't say this very often, but kudos to him. He did a good job with it.
He's a good kid.
Yeah, he really is. He's very popular among fans, and anybody who's ever dealt with him knows why. When you're an honest, sincere kid, which he pretty much is, you're an easy guy to like, and he is.
He's pretty proud of where he is from his weight perspective. He came over and said, what do you think? And somebody threw out 350, and he goes, no. Someone threw out 340, he goes, a little higher. You know, he wouldn't give us the exact number, but
and that's impressive because he hasn't really worked out.
And south of 350, he said.
He looks big, but he doesn't look last year showing up to camp and you went,
wow.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. That was the other thing he said. What do you think I weighed last year? And someone said 365.
Oh,
and
no.
He laughed. He goes, yeah, not far from that.
Yeah.
He wasn't giving you the truth.
There's a bunch more than that.
But he's proud of where he is right now because it's obviously an issue. Everyone is always saying, what's he doing? And his weight is always at the top of mind.
Oh, no question. Yeah.
He had a big smile on his face out on the practice, and it was good to see him running.
I thought, I agree with you, John. I thought he did a tremendous job, in handling himself. And, folks, if you want to go and watch his press conference. Just go to Jaguars.com. It's under the media gallery section, Jaguars.com. Thank you. And you can watch it. I thought that, you know, he was apologetic. He apologized to the club and his teammates and the fans. And
he was in a tough spot.
He owned it up.
As I told somebody afterward, it's a tough spot, but if you're honest and forthcoming and you're willing to kind of show that, you can handle that situation. A lot of guys don't. A lot of guys try to say, I don't want to talk about that, or I'm not, you know, or they get mad at the questions. He was, you know, he was very professional and I thought very classy.
Yeah,
in a tough situation.
Because when I had a chance to see him yesterday on the practice field, and my first reaction was he doesn't look in too bad a shape. And then I knew that he was going to have the press conference or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so when I got home later that day, I watched it on Jaguars.com and thought that he did very well. And I'm glad that he's ahead of schedule to where that he can start to work out and do the things that he needs to do to get his body kind of headed in the direction that needs to go in, and that's preparing for training camp.
What do you want
to
do?
Now, he's not there yet. I mean, you know, until he gets back out on the field, until he has a helmet on, until he's taking contact, there's still an unknown there. But I think the good news out of yesterday, you know, for Terrence is he's in as good a shape and a good a position as he could expect to be 5 weeks after this incident.
And unable to go full bore in terms of a workout.
Well, he's lifting, he says.
Right.
We saw him running a little bit on the practice field. So, I mean, those are good signs.
And lifting is important because lifting by its nature, as you guys know, I know little about this subject, but I'm told that lifting puts a great deal of pressure on, you know, and it pressures the eye. And if it can take that, that's a good sign because that's the issue.
Hey, just to put a bow on that, tomorrow night, 6 to 8, where? What's the address?
It is at the Atlantic Recreation Center in Fernandina Beach. That's 2500 Atlantic Avenue. So, again, tomorrow night's Team Teal Rally in Nassau County, Atlantic Recreation Center, 2500 Atlantic Avenue, Fernandina Beach.
From 6 o'clock until 8 o'clock.
6 to 8 p.m.
All right, and so in the next half hour, we'll talk a little bit about Maurice. Obviously, that became an issue yesterday when Mike Mularkey talked about the contract. What else from the practice field? Anything?
Well, I think there's a lot. I mean, to me, watching some of the draft picks, you know, and watched a little bit of Justin Blackmon, and obviously that was the first thing I wanted to watch because I wanted to see, you know, foot. Was he showing any ill effects from the foot? And he didn't show any. And then I spent some time watching the defensive line, and we'll talk about that on the other side.
All right, so we've got plenty to talk about this evening. Don't forget, tomorrow night, Nassau County, 6 to 8, the Atlantic Recreation Center at 2500 Atlantic Avenue up there. Of course, you can find all the details at myteamteal.com, probably on jaguars.com as well. So we've got another half hour of Jaguars this week. It's brought to you every Wednesday night at 6 o'clock here on News Talk WOKV by our friends at Aetna. Come back on the other side. We're going to hand it over to the guys in the newsroom, or guys and ladies, for all the news coverage, weather, traffic that you need. And we'll be back to wrap up Jaguars this week after this. Alexander. All right, welcome back. Our second half hour, Jaguars this week. Brian Sexton along with John Osher, Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato. Phone lines are open, 800-355-NFL1. 355-6351. Two topics to discuss. The first is Don Banks' report that Gabbert's not the man, although that clearly is not the case. And then the Maurice Jones-Drew story that Mike Mularkey commented on. So where do you want to go first?
Well, let's start with the Don Banks thing because, you know, I had no idea that, you know, I don't read Don Banks. I don't follow Don Banks of SI. You know, so I happen to be looking at Pro Football Talk, which usually you can get all the major headlines, and then you can pick and choose what you want to read and go to the other sites that actually generated the story. And saw the headlines on Pro Football Talk and said, you know, Gabbert's not necessarily the guy, or whatever. Don Banks thinks that Chad Henry talked to somebody, that Hennick is going to probably eventually beat him out. So I went and read what Don Banks had written. The title on Pro Football Talk certainly, I think, led on to more than what Don Banks actually reported. But after reading Don Banks, I'm like, who did he talk to? Right. Because I don't hear that. Right. I don't see that. So I'm just curious as to, did he talk to somebody that delivered mail here?
Right.
I don't know.
As we talked about off the air, I've known Don for almost 20 years. He's a good reporter. I don't doubt that he talked to somebody who led him to believe what he wrote. But I don't get the sense from talking to people inside the building that that's the vibe of the building. And I think there's a difference there.
And, look, even though Coach Mularkey had said Blaine's our starter, and he's the guy, the reality of it is anybody could beat out anybody.
Right.
If they prove it on the field. I mean, that's the way it always is, So. Right.
And you bring in, we talked about this when they brought in Chad Henne. You bring in Chad Henne because you want your roster to be as strong as it possibly can. You bring in Chad Henne because, frankly, you don't know beyond a shadow of a doubt that Blaine is going to play well or be healthy. There are various reasons to bring in a quality backup, but, we saw last year when Blaine faltered, there wasn't really an option. You want to have an option in case, but there's no thought that in case is going to happen.
Well, I poked around.
But you can't
around.
Be dim. I mean,
no, you can't. And I poked around today just asking, and I got, what, you didn't buy that, did you? And I said, no, did I miss something? Is there something that's happened in a meeting somewhere, or a bad practice out here? What's going on? No, he's looked good. Look at him. And he was throwing the ball well today.
He looked good yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was why I didn't understand it. And the reaction I got was, don't believe everything you read.
Right. And,
which I don't anyway. But
sometimes even good national guys miss because they're covering 32 teams. You hear.
And let's face it, this is the team they get the least amount of information.
Right. About. And you hear one thing. Who knows who he heard it from? And I just don't put much stock into it. And that's not a knock on Don because he's a very good reporter, but even good reporters get him wrong. And on this one,
he's a reputable guy. He's been around a long time.
The feeling among people around the team is that's not accurate. That's not what it is. So anyway,
I mean, it's I guess that's what gets written this time of year.
Right.
I mean, everybody wants to speculate what could happen.
Right.
But there's definitely,
and that's sort of the easy theme right now nationally, is to sort of take Blaine Gabbert and try to figure out a new way to say he ain't going to be the guy. And and that's fine. Based on the statistics last year, it's an easy thing to write. Nobody right now outside of Jackson was going to disagree with it because they're not going to put in the effort to really disagree with it. But as of right now, anybody around this team right now, there's not a lot of vibe that there's a question mark at quarterback.
Well, it was the definitive way that he finished off the paragraph. Did you read it? He says, it may be Gabbert's team and Gabbert's job in mid-May, but by the time summer is drawing to a close, it'll be clear that Henne is the best man to run Mularkey's offense. That's really just nothing more than crazy speculation.
I say crazy,
meaning you're just throwing it out there in May.
In internet writing right now, you must have an opinion that gets picked up. And it's easy to tweet.
That's definitely
easy to
it.
Tweet. Yeah,
that's it. And we're talking about it, so obviously it achieved its purpose.
So,
because we're sending people to SI.com to read it for themselves now.
Sure.
And that only helps him.
Good for Don.
What is it that the other guy says? If it's good for me, it's good for me?
Yeah. And that's what...
That's what it's become.
It's what it is. I mean, I'm stammering over it, but that's what it is.
You guys went... Journalism. Okay,
journalism school.
And I wonder how much that has changed.
I can tell you firsthand.
I mean, it's, obviously the landscape is completely different than when you guys were. I mean, there was no internet.
No.
I mean, there wasn't even.
I'll tell you Kansas how it's set up.
There wasn't even books when you guys were in school. So.
Yeah. The journalism school at Kansas was always about print. I mean, it was in the big building up on the hill. And the broadcast school was in a smaller school, and the radio station still was in a smaller garage building. Today, when you walk into the newsroom in the journalism school, it's one. They have brought all three things together. Well, they have very different purposes. Facts, right? Mostly in print. Radio, like print, journalism. But the internet thing has always been about opinion, about entertainment, about grabbing people's page views, getting their eyes on it. So now all of a sudden, you are learning a multimedia discipline
And I think there are still, I know there are still journalism, ethics, morals classes, things like that.
It's still getting taught, but it's not getting executed.
It's being applied completely different in the real world.
Yeah, I was going to say, do they teach different levels of standards or...
They probably still teach all the same standards, but they don't apply it.
Right, they teach the standard
laboratory.
You know, this is a topic that we could go into ad nauseum because Brian and I obviously are interested in it. I'm not sure how many fans are. A big problem is the industry. There's so many fewer jobs that there are fewer entry level jobs. When there are fewer entry level jobs, fewer young writers are learning fundamentals such as getting everything correct, such as checking facts, and outlandish opinion is rewarded. So that is what more and more young people are going to.
Well, and then the other side of the coin, and we'll let's take it for another 2 minutes up to the break. Pro Football Talk is immensely popular. I mean, it's maybe the most popular blog, and look, it's on Sunday night's pregame. Peter King references
it constantly. And very successful and very lucrative.
Very. He didn't go to journalism school. Mike Florio is an attorney.
10 years ago, that wasn't even a job. Now it's a stepping stone.
And
so it's
exactly so what he did
drastic was, difference.
You know, you don't even need a radio station. No offense to Mike Dorr at WOKV. You don't need a radio station to have a voice now with the internet, because we could tape this whole thing into the computer and Joe could podcast it.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that you and I, none of us have to have any real credentials. All we have to do is find a way to get it in people's hands. How do we market it so that people say, I want to listen to them? Well, we say outrageous things and don't have to have any accountability whatsoever, because there's no boss. We're doing it for ourselves, and we could probably do some really crazy stuff and get a sponsor, and if we worked hard enough, make it a living and never have gone to journalism school. And that's the other side of the coin, is the internet has lowered the barriers, so anybody can do it.
And that's why I'm just, people, you got to make sure that you got to figure out where the source is.
Now, that said, if we're talking about Don Banks is a very accomplished journalism, I mean, he's a journalist. But the road to success in the business that I came from is much more about being outlandish than it is being right.
True. And our buddy Pete, when he left the Times Union, was that 10, 11 years ago that he went to CBS Sports?
Yeah, right at that.
Okay.
Yes.
And I can remember him saying, watch how this is different now. I'll be able to use my opinion more. And now when you read his stuff, it's all opinion. I mean, he's got facts.
Yeah,
in
an
it
argument
too.
Can be made that it was when he was with the TU.
Without that, you would make that argument. But so much of his stuff is just raw opinion, as opposed to
it's educated opinion.
The beat writer is about fact.
Sure.
Here's what happened, and it wasn't why, it was what.
Sure.
What and who? So, different world out there, folks, for sure. Let's break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about Maurice Jones-Drew and the contract situation, and we may actually get to a phone call, but that's not a guarantee. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville on Jaguars Radio.
Decision last week on gay marriage, still sort of...
All right, rolling right along here. We will talk about Maurice Jones-Drew and Mike Mularkey's comments relative to his contract situation and absence from the voluntary OTAs. But we were talking about the defensive line logs earlier. So let's get back to that topic before we finish up with Maurice.
Yeah, you know, obviously... yesterday during individual, I mean, you can't help but your head just naturally turns to the voice of Joe Cullen, because he's just so loud and he works that group very hard.
He was feisty today too.
He
was good. He was in rare form. Well, I shouldn't say rare form. He was in form.
Typical form.
Right.
But, you know, yesterday I really wanted to watch some of the young guys, and Jairus Pendleton continued to impress me because he is a man. You know, he's a 28-year-old rookie, and he certainly has got the part, and they were doing a bag drill, and he just looks like a very powerful man. You know,
right.
When you watch him do the bag drill and C.J. Mosley do the bag drill, you're not going, well, he's the rookie, and it's very obvious. You're going, he looks like he just fits right in.
Now, he'd better look like that, because he's not going to grow anymore.
No.
So, I mean, it's good to hear, because it makes you think he can contribute the next couple of years.
Yeah,
I mean,
he looked good.
Over the next couple of years.
He looked good, and I really watched a lot of Andre Branch. And I like to watch how he gets coached, because, you know, Joe Cullen coaches him hard. And Joe, you know, he always is harder on rookies than he is anybody, because he's trying to demand, he's trying to see if he can test them mentally, he's trying to test them physically.
And you want to set a base.
Absolutely. You're trying to set a standard that, hey, this is what is expected of you. And I like the way that Joe was coaching him, and that, you know, the knock on Andre Branch coming out of Clemson was that he can't play the run. I mean, you go to the internet, here we go back to the internet again, and you read the scouting reports on Branch, pass rusher, weak against the run. You know, and so Joe, during the bag drill, is, they say you can't play the run. Sure, you can play the run. And Andre Branch is, I mean, he's digging in. He's digging in. And so I think he's a guy that, you know, all the scouting reports that you read are saying, you know, DPR, designated pass rusher, I ain't buying it. I think this is a guy that's going to develop into an every down player.
What do you think he needs to weigh? If he's 258 today, to be an every down player over the course of his career?
I mean, guys do it at 260 all the time, 265.
So he may be big enough.
As you know, and that's what, that's 5-7 pounds away. I did it for years at 263, 265. You know, and if you're a right end, which most of the times when you're playing a right defensive end, you're what we call an open side end. You're not dealing with a lot of tight ends, and you're not getting real tight onto the shoulder pad of the offensive tackle. So you can play with leverage, you can play with speed, and you can play with quickness and awareness, more so than just your brawn, which is what a left defensive end has to play more with.
Now, when you say he can do it, can he do it this year or next year?
I think he can do it this year.
Okay.
I think absolutely he's going to play some first and second down this year. And you know what? It might be out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Aaron Campman, you know, I read the comments that, you know, they're talking about Rasheen Mathis and Aaron Campman, and Rasheen is ahead of Aaron Campman.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Well, didn't Rasheen have surgery well after Aaron Campman? Yeah. Well, Aaron had to have a follow-up procedure. But I didn't like reading that.
No,
so
when clearly Aaron's a situation where it's all going to come down to, can he perform in training camp?
Yeah.
That's what it is. If he can, then he plays his role. If he doesn't, then, yeah, who knows?
So with Andre Branch, I like what I saw. You know, and you always read body language. You know, much like Mike Mularkey is a body language reader, as a color analyst or an analyst, when you're not there to hear what's being said, the only thing that you can really read or hear or interpret is body language. And I love Andre Branch's body language, because Joe Cullen is hard on him. They're demanding a lot of him. And he is facing the challenge head on. And I like that body language.
Speaking of rookies, it was interesting today when Paul Posluszny was talking about, you know, there's different stuff he saw in OTAs, and he prefaced everything by saying, obviously, we're in shorts and tights. But the subject of Justin Blackmon came up, and Paul's words were absolute stud. And it was one of those things where you saw a guy who's been in the league 5 or 6 years who clearly sees something special in this first-round pick. That's what you're supposed to see, but it's still interesting to hear him use those words. Clearly, Justin Blackmon's a guy who physically belongs, and that's interesting.
The one guy that I did enjoy watching, I think he's kind of a, I don't say a sleeper because he's been talked about a little bit already, but defensive end Ryan Davis from Bethune-Cookman. It's hard to tell. It's only no pads, and you know, so take all this with a grain of salt. He looks athletic. He looks quick. He looks like he belongs on May 16th.
High hopes for him.
What about the kid Kendrick Adams from LSU? He walked by today, and he's got, you know, broad shoulders and long arms.
Yeah, he.
I'm just
body
saying,
type,
standing there.
Body right? type.
Body
when
type.
You see him, he reminds me of a when you see him standing.
Yeah,
he looks like Bobby McCray. You know, okay. he's that yeah. long, lean. Looks a little stiff.
Okay. Doesn't seem to have shown the pop that Davis.
No,
has.
he looks a little stiff.
Okay.
Kind of, you know, when a guy's going through bags and stuff, you want to see some fluidity, if that's a word.
It is now.
It is now?
Sure.
Okay, you want to see him
just
be,
like
you want to see them be fluid.
Right.
He doesn't look as fluid, certainly, as others.
A guy that I saw today that I thought looked pretty good was Austin Lane.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, you're not hitting anyone. That's what he does. He hits people.
He's a left defensive end.
Right.
He's going to be a pounder.
Right.
But he's got some pass rush ability, you know, and
that he admits
shoulders healthy now.
Together, yeah.
You know, shoulders healthy now. So,
and this is the year he's supposed a third
year
guy
three.
Who was a fifth round pick. Is that I mean
correct?
This is when he's supposed to be what he is.
Year three, but really kind of two and a half.
Right.
You know, because last year was a year in which he was on IR.
You're supposed to see if if he's going to have something, you're supposed to see it this year.
Well, and again, I didn't expect him to be necessarily that big-time pass rusher, but I did notice some athleticism from him today. You know, they were running. They had the great big plastic circle out, and they were running around it, and I noticed his change of direction. It stuck out at me. Hey, how about Maurice real quick in the last 3 minutes before the program comes? Mike Mularkey said yesterday, everyone is aware that, you know, this is now looking like a contract issue.
And I said this back, you know, when they had the veteran orientation camp. You know, I wish he were here for that. And I think I would have been happier if he had come for that and not come for this.
Sure.
Just to kind of show at the very beginning, hey, I'm on board, and then chose not to be around for the OTAs. I could kind of get that a little bit.
I thought Mike has handled it well in the sense that he said, hey, it's obviously voluntary, but he's let it be known that it would have been nice if he was here at some point. And I think everybody – I'm not sure anybody disagrees with – at some point during all this, he probably should have been here at some point. At the same time, I keep going back to, it's not going to affect him on the field. It's not going to be a long-term issue. It's more, would have been nice once or twice.
This is not about worrying about Maurice, you know.
Right.
Is Maurice going to be ready for the season?
Obviously.
You know he's going to be ready for the season. But sometimes when you have a guy like that, and he's involved in the OTAs, he can lift other people up, whether it be in the weight room, in the meeting room, or on the practice field. That's where you'd like to have Maurice Jones-Drew's presence, is in other areas besides just worrying about him, because I don't worry about him being ready for a season.
You don't worry about the contract becoming a bigger issue than it seems
today?
Well,
I hope not. You know, I've always been one of those guys, man, you sign your name on something, and
especially with 2 years left on it. With one, some teams will look at it.
You know, and we haven't gotten anything
from him,
from Maurice, or anything from his agent. So I don't know. You know, I don't want to say, I know he's unhappy. I haven't talked to him.
Right.
You know, I want to wait and hear from him.
No player is happy with their contract. I'd be shocked if he's not here for the mandatory minicamp. I'd be shocked if he's not here for training camp. He'll play hard next year. I don't think that's going to be an issue. But the only issue is, there's a good feeling around here right now. There's a good vibe. Things are going in the right direction. And you would like this not to be an issue.
If he's not here for the mandatory minicamp, then it's a story to me.
And then it's wrong. I mean, I don't think that'll be an issue.
We have a minute left.
I've heard that won't be an issue.
Philosophically speaking, 27-year-old running back, especially one that's as physically punishing as Maurice Jones-Drew, how do you handle something like that? You ask him to come in and play and then negotiate next year? Or do you, based on the season he had last year, try to find middle ground that's fair? They do have cap room they could manage.
You don't reward.
Is it my money?
Right.
That's why I'm asking you. Yeah, it's your money.
As much as he deserves to be paid, philosophically, and this is just
philosophically,
with 2 years left on a 27-year-old running back, no.
Well, two running backs got big checks last year. Adrian Peterson, severe knee injury. Chris Johnson did not perform.
And that's the first is the reason.
Yeah.
It's nothing against Maurice. The injury is the reason.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week right here on Jaguars This Week.